No, nobody's fault but mine. Nobody's fault but mine. And I said, if I should die, and my soul becomes lost, then I know that it's nobody's fault but mine. And I've got a mother, I got a mother, and she can pray. And I said, if I should die and my soul becomes lost, then I know that it's nobody's fault but mine. Yes, and I got a father, I got a father, and he gave me peaches. And I said, if I should die, my soul becomes lost, and I know that nobody's fault but mine.
Looking for comfort, words so much. Oh. driver and wait for you. Cause tonight could be the night when you realize this is right. And so I wait for you. We'll be right back.
a little tune called Brass Ring Blues. Don't you see me? Every time I come around, don't you see me? Every time I come around, well, Lord, I nearly fall down to the ground. One hand reaching out, and one hand on the pole. One hand reaching out, and one hand on the pole. Oh, that shiny brass ring is my favorite goal. Brass ring, brass ring, it's the only thing that I want in this world. An empty gun underneath my bed. Said I've only known an empty gun underneath my bed. Oh, but not anymore. I've got plenty of lead. I know one time I'm gonna have my day. I know one time I'm gonna have my day. But if I wanna ride carousel again, I'm gonna have to pay. Brass ring, brass ring, it's the only thing that I want in this world.
My street, this is my doorstep, this is the doorbell to my place. This is the floor, these are the walls, this is the room where you're standing, saying, will I, will thank you.
This is the window, this is the sill, this is the view from my room. This is today, this is tomorrow, these are the days we are living. You do.
At his feet, clutching pictures of past lovers at his side, stood at the table where she sat, and removed his hat in respect of her presence. Presents her with the pictures and says, "These are just ghosts that broke my heart before I met you. These are just ghosts that broke my heart before I met you." Opened up his heart, unlocked the lock that kept it dark, come red-written warning, sing I'm still mourning. Of a ghost, of a ghost, of a ghost, of a ghost that broke my heart before I met you. Lover, please do not fall to your knees. It's not like I believe in everlasting love. Crazy at 19, said he'd lost all his self-esteem. Couldn't understand why I was crying. He would stare at empty chairs, think of the ghosts that once were there. The ghost that broke his heart, oh, the ghost that broke my heart. The ghost that broke his heart, oh, the ghost that broke my heart. The ghost, the ghost, the ghost, the ghost, the ghost, the ghost, the ghost that broke my heart before I met you. Lover, please do not fall to your knees. It's not like I believe in everlasting love. He says I'm so lost, not at all.
Thank you. She was waiting at the station. Bits in between, all the matter in the world is how much that I like you. She said, more? Said, let me try and explain again. Right, birds can fly so high and they can shit on your head, yeah, they can almost fly into your eye and make you feel so scared, but when you look at them and you see that they're beautiful, that's how I feel about you. Right, birds can fly so high and they can shit on your head, yeah, they can almost fly into your eye and make you feel so scared, but when you talking about. He said you. Right, birds can fly so high and they can shit on your head, yeah, they can almost fly into your eye and make you feel so scared, but when you look at them and you see that they're beautiful, that's how I feel about you. Right, birds can fly so high and they can shit on your head, yeah, they can fly into your eye and make you feel so scared, but when you look at them and you see that they're beautiful, that's how I feel about you. She said, thanks, I like you too. He said,
said she would cling to him forever, but at last she had to go. When the turkey died, she made a vow she would haunt him every night. And now there's the ghost of the turkey roaming in the garden every Christmas night. Ooh, ooh, on the wall in the pale moonlight, may the wings and toes pass. parson's nose, wriggle in your throat and hurt ya. You spoiled my end of a perfect day. Ooh, ooh, gobble, gobble, gotcha. Now, ladies and gentlemen, please, I would like to invite all the people of Britain, or those who are listening, to help Farmer Jenkins to exorcise the ghost of his turkey with a little bit of audience participation. So when we get to the bit, ooh, ooh, gobble, gobble, gotcha, gentlemen, you will do the ooh-oohs. Peter Bowles, when was the last time you had a good ooh-ooh?
Well, are we going to do the gobble bit?
Well, that's the no, ladies, please. Don't preempt me. The ladies, wherever you are in the country, you will do the gobbling. I'm sure we have some enthusiastic gobblers out there. And then we shall all do the rather common gesture, gotcha, at the end. We're going to have a joint sing-along stroke exorcism. First time it's ever been done on Loose Ends, as far as I know. Thank you, Mr. Silverman. Farmer Jenkins can't get any slumber, lies awake each morn till two. Since that turkey's chassis filled an oven and her giblets made a stew. Every night a voice calls mournfully, "Oh, you dirty crook, you've twisted me." There's a ghost of the turkey roaming in the garden every Christmas night. Ooh, but not yet, no, that's later. On the wall in the pale moonlight, may the wings and toes, parson's nose, wriggle in your throat and hurt ya. You spoiled my end of a perfect day. Here we go. Ooh, ooh, gobble, gobble, getcha. You spoiled my end of a perfect day. Ooh, ooh, gobble, gobble, getcha. Thank you. It works, it works.
The hard hat. Sing me the reflection of the sun and the snow in the glasses beneath the hard hat. Sing me the rumbling sorter. Sing me the distortion of the sun and the snow in the window of the cabin of the rumbling sorter and in the glasses beneath the hard hat.
Sing me, sing me, sing me the dimples. Sing me, sing me.
The deep blue pools. Sing me the refraction of the sun and the snow in the surface of the sun. How gorgeous. Deep blue pools. And in the window of the cabin of the rumbling sorter and in the glasses beneath the hard hat.
Sing me, sing me, sing me the deep pools of blue. Sing me, sing me, sing me.
Said, it's an astonishing feeling, sun reflecting in the glasses beneath the hard hat. To think we're uncovering something, sun reflecting in the glasses beneath the hard hat, millions of years old, and we're the first to see it. But I couldn't hear him for the sound of his machine's song and the sun reflecting in the glasses beneath the hard hat.
Sing me the reflection.
Sing me the refraction.
Sing me the distortion.
Sing me the distortion.
Sing me the reflection.
Sing me the reflection.
Sing me the uncovering.
Sing me the uncovering.
Sing me the reflection.
Sing me the reflection.
Sing me the distortion.
Sing me the distortion.
very good Ian McMillan. And John, you're going to interview him for us.
Yes, shall I? Yeah.
Well, why not?
Why not? I was hoping for Ian McKellen as well. I don't know what happened there, but thank goodness you came dressed as Gandalf.
Ian McMillan.
All that. But let's be Ian McMillan.
All right.
Because that's kind of why you're here. Now, tell me, the album, as we know, is called Sharp Stories.
Mm.
I'm assuming we just heard one.
Yes.
Songs, Poems, Stories and Music is the subtitle. Which is it? Or can they be all at the same time?
They're all the same thing, because what interested me was I've been making a living for years and years as a guy who stands up and talks, and I've always been interested in that link between poetry and music, and poetry began as a thing to accompany dancing. People mm-hmm. years, thousands of years ago would chant to accompany dancing, so the links between poems and music have always been there, and I've been working with Luke Carver-Goss, the composer, for a while, just doing kind of improvised things, and we said, let's put together some words and music for an album of kind of spoken word and a bit of music, see if we can draw together that thing. And then our agent said, why don't you make a band of it? We said, all right, why not? One of those ideas you have in the pub, the more beer you have,
the better
the idea gets. They said, not call it a band, call it an orchestra. So we said, so we've now got the Ian McMillan Orchestra, which is fantastic. And the great thing about it is, as you can see there, it really feels to me like it's a marriage of words and music. So I'm excited by the idea of writing things that aren't songs, they're more than songs. We've got the songs there, they're singing. In the middle, I'm doing this kind of Barnsley mumbling. I mean, somebody uncannily call it flat cap rapping, which isn't the case. I think it's more than that. It's kind of me celebrating my voice and the way I speak and celebrating this fella who was so excited about his quarry.
Yeah.
When it says sun reflecting in the glasses beneath the hard hat, he had these sunglasses on and he was showing me around this thing and I couldn't hear a word he said because of the rumbling sorter. And just the sun reflecting, I thought, what a beautiful thing.
Well, it is. Struck me as well. It's a lovely phrase. As well. You really get the picture of that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the idea. You know,
so what comes first with it? Does the poem, as it were, come first, or do you kind of the music come first, and then you put the poem to it? How does it work?
Bit of both. Sometimes, I mean, sometimes that poem existed as it was.
Yeah.
Sometimes we get together and just improvise something. There's one on the album called "What He Was Doing" about my dad, who just told us all the time what he was doing. Yeah. So we go up and say, I'm just getting up. Then I go, I'm just going in the bathroom now. Then I go, I'm just going down the stairs, just having my breakfast. And me and me brother and me mother would be sitting there thinking, I wish he'd shut up. And then he'd go out of the house. And he'd go, I'm just off to work now. We imagined him on the way to work. I'm just driving to work. So,
just to himself in the car.
So that's in there as well. And there are pieces that are kind of spoken like that. And what excites me about it is we feel like we're trying to create something new, something that's not quite a song, that's not quite a poem, that's kind of beyond that, a word I can't think of.
Yeah, you need to invent a phrase.
Invent a new
it's
word
a, it's
for
a song, it's a pong.
It's a pong.
That's what it is.
That's
what we call it.
It's a pong.
You mentioned Luke Carver-Goss there, because I have to say, is the only reason he's got the word Carver in the middle of that is because the other Luke Goss, of course, was famously in Bros.
Me and Luke do a lot of gigs in school,
yeah.
And we get to schools and certain middle-aged teachers are standing there with Bros albums to sign.
They must be so disappointed.
They are so disappointed. And they often think that I'm Rupert Everett until I can walk through the door. Think, oh, it's not Rupert Everett, it's not Luke Goss, and then they send
Ian McKellen.
That's
interesting. So, I'm very interested in your language, in your lyrics and in the writing here, because there's one of the songs on the album is about Ronnie Barker,
mm-hmm.
And I guess because of your love of the language and everything else, and presumably you're a big fan of a big influence in terms of the words he uses and how he used to write.
It was funny because Radio 4 rang me up the day he died and said, "Quick, can you write a poem about Ronnie Barker for Front Row?" I said, "Yeah, I can do that. I like being given these." And they said, "You've got to write it now. Go on." They gave me a very strict thing. They said, make it include the phrase "good night" from him and about people gathered around the telly. And it came out, and I was really excited about that. And in the song, in the poem, it's about the fact that he did use language to a fantastic degree, and he made us realise that we can all use it. That's what excites me. I want people to go away from seeing one of our gigs going, is that it? We can all do it. I've got this impression that everybody can create. I don't like that idea that some people write and some people watch it. My idea of arts for all is that we all have a go, and that's what Ronnie Barker taught us. But in fact, we can mess about with language. You know, I'm a big fan of what I call Apostrophe Amnesty Day. I think one day a year, let's have Apostrophe Amnesty Day. Let's put them where we want.
Oh.
I know that
Lynn Truss wouldn't like you, would she?
No, she wouldn't.
Well, let's just get rid of them all together.
Because throw them away.
People make mistakes the whole time, but they're only theirs.
George Bernard Shaw threw them away, didn't he?
Yeah.
He didn't eat it, it was alright, wasn't he?
Yeah. Greengrocers don't care a damn.
No, it doesn't matter, because people say, I'm cleverer than you because I know there's no apostrophe in tomatoes. You say, yes, but I'm funnier than you because I put three in.
Do you know what? I love that.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
use that. Tell me why cats make you sneeze. It seems to say that on all of publicity.
It's just because I'm incredibly allergic to cats, so sometimes a lot of arty people have cats and dogs.
So you put this on as a sort of warning?
It is a warning. So if I go to a house with cats, I swell to four times my normal size. and turn purple. Some are kind of Barnsley Zeppelin. It's quite amusing for about a minute. And then you find you can't get out of the house. So, yeah. And because you often stay in people's houses who've got cats, you do find yourself in it. It's a problem as a man who makes your living through talking. If you can't speak,
well, you should take a leaf out of your dad's book and just go, I don't like cats, wherever you go.
I say it all the time. And I went to a house the other day and I said, I don't like cats. They said, it's all right, we've put it out. Mm. I said, you could have put it down in the early 50s and I'd still be able to detect it in the room. That's a sad thing. Yeah. I wish I wasn't. It's a daft thing. You know, because all it is your body reacting to something. Linda started being allergic already just by talking about it.
Allergic to the word cat, Linda.
It's your body being allergic to things that can't help them, which is a sad thing.
Could you, you're a beat poet for the police, I understand.
Well, I was set on by Humberside Police as their beat poet. I did an after-dinner speech for a group of chief constables, which was quite interesting. Right. And at the end, the chief constable of Humberside drove past in his car, and his chauffeur driven Bentley, and he had a white glove on like Michael Jackson. And he pointed out the window, and he went, you could be our poet. And I said, what would that entail? He said, you can go anywhere you want, follow the police around, write poems about it. I said, what, round Hull on a Friday night?
Yeah.
He said, yes. I said, all right. So I wrote these poems, so I became, Humberside Police's beat poet. And it was interesting because you were able to go around places that you wouldn't normally go. I made a little television programme about it, and that was good. I was disappointed that the coppers didn't write many poems. We had a couple of workshops where the coppers didn't turn up. But then eventually, once they got to know me, once they realised it was only me, they said, oh, it's only him. You know, and they used to give me poems. One copper wrote this fantastic poem about his chickens. It was the best poem about chickens by a copper I've ever read, to be frank. But what you found was that they were doing it as well. They liked it. So, that was an interesting
thing. It's like that American programme, Cops, but with poetry.
We're
running out of time slightly, but tell me, you once sang Chattanooga Choo Choo while eating a bag of plain crisps. This is what I know of you.
Yeah.
Do tell me how and why that happened.
Well, it was in my early years as a comedian going around folk clubs, and we thought it would be so funny. Mm. We used to sing Tie Your Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree backwards, which didn't get any laughs, but then we thought, if I eat a bag of crisps while singing Chattanooga Choo Choo.
As it happens,
you've got one. Fantastic.
I've got a bag of crisps.
I think we should.
And they're plain, because I know that's what you like. I wondered if you could give us a sort of rendition of that.
They are ridge cut. And they are made out of an old cat.
Oh, yeah. Right. So we're looking forward to you swelling up and getting out of the room as well.
Move the water over here. So what I have to do is I have to sing it. And the problem is then, people get sprayed with crisps.
I'm away from
the microphone.
It's a kind of piece of avant-garde theatre now.
So this is Chattanooga Choo Choo, Ian McMillan,
yes,
on the crisps.
I think this will be on Pick of the Week, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Hi there, Tex, what you say? Grandma's partner is my babe. I'm here, working through my room. Now the village shy, trying to see that same. Probably born. Now the family Rupert. Anyway, we will call for a fame. There's going to be a grand party.
Well, that was it. That was him, McMillan and Chris.
Well, there it is, our entry for Pick and Mix of the Week.
So just send the tour dates live, I suppose, didn't we? Always here, I think. I'm guessing. It wasn't just Chris. Do you know your tour dates? Do you want to, I suppose?
Yes, one of the Garforth Festival.
Yes.
This Thursday.
Go on.
The Hebden Bridge Festival.
Yep.
This Friday.
Yep.
And the Art Centre in Darlington on Saturday.
There.
Then I'm going to have crisps surgically removed from my body.
But aren't these places all underwater at the moment? Are you going to be able to do these dates?
Well, that's why I'm taking the crisps.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can blow it away on a big crisp.
You're absorbing.
Eat you tight, my darling. Hope sweet dreams are on their way. And the bed bugs keep at bay. And you do not have to slay any big ones who've mutated to the size of cats and dogs. Hope the bedbugs don't have talons and great teeth to bite your legs, drain your marrow to the dregs, but I'm sure they won't attack you if you lie here very still. I check the bed for monsters, there are several underneath, and they're sharpening their teeth after gorging on the carcass of a boy who bothered grown-ups. He went like a lamb to slaughter, all for just one glass of water, but you're safe for now because there's still a quarter of him left. See that shadow hanging by the door? It could be a dressing gown or nothing more. But it's the rotting corpse of Zombie Jim, and I pity any little child who tries to get past him. Oh, dry your tears, my love chumps. How I hate to see you cry, and I'll tell you now for why. There's a certain sort of fly who will burrow in your eye just to drink the salty water from your tear ducts. Once he's had a drink, he'll lay his eggs inside your brain, cause excruciating pain, that's until you go insane. And he says if you complain about bedtime set at 4:30, he'll poo right in your ear. Yes, I know that you're not very tired, but if you don't go to sleep, then I'll get fired. Without a job, I can't buy any food, toys or clothes, and so you'll have to go to play school in the nude.
So close your eyes. So, my dad always got it wrong at that point. So close your eyes, my precious. Bats can't bite if you're asleep. Although if they hear a peep about sharing bed with mummy, then they'll rip you limb from limb. If I don't get to read the paper, there's a certain ghostly vapor who lives underneath the wardrobe, says you'll share a bed with him. Heaven knows I miss you when you sleep, but the devil knows the company I keep. While you're up here safely in your bed, I'll be downstairs the Ouija board communing with the dead. It's a beautiful song.
Dave, is there something wrong? You're here, but you're already gone. And I know it's another world, and you shout, only to be heard. You say, I'm just so cynical, I didn't know anything. Talking down the wire, there's no one on the other end. Am I still a man or am I part of the machinery?
Linton Kwesi Johnson was born in Jamaica in 1952, joined his mother in Brixton in 1963. He's been writing and performing poetry since the 1970s. He's been credited with inventing dub poetry, or at any rate the term to describe the blending of spoken verse with reggae music. His poems of politics and protest, often written in Jamaican dialect, have been widely acclaimed as capturing the black experience in Britain. Tomorrow night he's performing with Dennis Boville Dub Band at the Barbican as part of the East 2008 Festival, celebrating the vibrancy of East London. Well, I mentioned that remark about poetry earlier on, but I would say, I'd imagine you would say your poems are very accessible and understandable to anybody hearing them or reading them.
Well, my approach to poetry has always been about accessibility, because I came to poetry through politics. And when I began to write verse writing verse for me was a political act, and poetry was a weapon, a cultural weapon, in the black liberation struggle. Mm. So my aesthetics are rather different from those people who see poetry as something more exclusive.
Yes, but in pursuing a political line, if I ask the question, why poetry? That's your drawn string, but why not, you know, as a conventional political career or writing?
I guess because, I don't know, poetry chose me, I didn't choose it. I guess it's because poetry really is basically a distillation of experience.
Yeah.
A distillation of experience through language, and it's the most succinct way of expressing how one feels about a particular situation, or how one feels about what one is experiencing in the world.
Yes, and I suppose I should just ask you why this particular form of, you know, dub poetry, where you're writing a poem and then speaking it with music behind. That's almost like a song, but it's not a song. What?
I think poetry is always it's not nothing new. I think that has been going on from creation. You know, we have a sense of the troubadours, that kind of a tradition. And I belong to a generation of Caribbean poets who have rediscovered orality, and I've more or less combined that with the folk traditions out of which is part of our cultural heritage.
Mm. Yeah, and part of your experience obviously was coming to this country when you were 10 or 11, that sort of age. Was there anything about it you really enjoyed? Can you think back? Was it good, or was it from the start a struggle, or what? Can you remember your feelings exactly then?
School dinners. I like the puddings.
All right.
Yes, that's my best memory.
Well, you should do a poem about school dinners, a happy poem celebrating.
As my best memories of coming to England, but yeah. I arrived on the 8th of November 1963, and it was a cold, bleak, grey day, and I wanted to get back on the plane and go right back to Jamaica.
Yes, I think I remember that day. It was a cold day, but. and you've written in, I'm calling it Jamaican dialect, or, you know, Jamaican language. That's, again, presumably a deliberate choice. That was the language you felt happiest to express yourself in.
Yes, because for me, one of the defining characteristics of poetry is authenticity of voice.
Mm.
And the English language is part of my heritage, but my first language is Jamaican everyday speech. And since I was writing about the Caribbean experience, it seemed to make sense to me to do so in the everyday spoken language of the people about whose experience that I was writing or trying to write, rather than the rarefied language of English classical poetry.
Mm. Well, maybe yourself comparing your approach to that of Robert Burns, who chose to write a lot of poems in what was sort of becoming antiquated Scots.
I tell you what, I met a Scottish geezer once, and he said to me, "Are you supposed to be a poet, aren't you?" And I said, yeah. He said, "What kind of a poet are you?" I said, "Well, I'm like a black Robbie Burns." He said, "Leave it out." He said, "You haven't shagged half the women he has."
I'm not too impressed with your Scotch accent there, but I get the point you're making. but he wrote some poems in what you might call standard English, and some perhaps all his most memorable poems were written in the language of his, you know, locality, and that was your approach. Now, what about this East Festival? This is celebrating, well, a variety of cultures coming to the East End of London.
Yes, and I'm there for the Jamaican part of, and I'm very proud to be taking part in it, even though I'm a South Londoner.
Yes. I suppose for people who don't know London terribly well, East London is a particularly evocative place because it's, I mean, all cities have rich and poor areas, but in the East End, it was right up against the City of London, which is the most expensive area probably in the world. And you could see it from a really, you know, poor area where there's people are really struggling. Is that been captured, do you think, in this festival?
I couldn't tell you, mate, but...
Well, you're at the Barbican, which is the centre of wealth in the whole country.
And they're going to be They're staging there the musical, a musical version of the classical Jamaican film, The Harder They Come.
Yes.
Which starred Jimmy Cliff.
Yeah.
And the late Perry Henzel, the Jamaican guy who directed The Harder They Come, did a musical version of, yes, of the film, which I saw at the Royalty Theatre in Stratford, and it's fabulous. It's,
yeah.
It really is a good, a very good musical.
Yes.
And they're having a festival of Jamaican films as well, including The Harder They Come, Smile Orange, Countryman.
Okay, and you'll be performing as well, we've already discussed, with a full concert with you, or are you just...
Yes, I'm playing, I'm showcasing my record label, LKJ Records, so we have artists from the label like Dennis Bovell and his dub band were accompanying me.
Yeah.
Jean Binta Breeze, Winston Francis, the Jamaican singer from back way back in the Rocksteady era. But if anybody wants to go to the gig, I suggest that they phone up the Barbican first, because I think it's sold out.
Oh, okay. Well, that's, you're plugging it, but you're putting people off. So that's anyway. You clearly need a retrospective album called "Still Quasi After All These Years." But that's just my suggestion. Okay.
Indeed, Hugh Cornwell was the guitarist, vocalist with the legendary Stranglers, who were punks and yet not. They created some of the great anthems of the 70s and 80s, No More Heroes, Hanging Around, and Golden Brown, which we shall, I'm delighted to say, be hearing shortly. Hugh was a bona fide rock star. Drugs, prison, battles with fellow band members, Kate Bush, and most pleasingly in my book, he bashed down the dressing room door of a boy band, apparently, on Top of the Pops. Do you remember, right?
Did anyone see me do it?
No, it wasn't you, obviously. It was
hearsay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was that the name of the band. I'm sorry. I've fallen behind.
Yeah.
Well, you were a pretty much a rock and roller in your day, weren't you, Hugh?
Well, I think what you've got to remember is that when you're in a band that with a strong name and a strong image, you're a bit of a collective personality. So. So there were parts of it that I will attest to being part of my character, and parts of that image that I will say are really, you know...
Well, you mean really you wanted to sort of go back early to your room for a yoga,
yeah,
you
yeah,
felt
yeah.
obliged
yeah, yeah,
since
absolutely.
You were in the Stranglers
absolutely.
To go and smash up
yeah,
hotel
yeah, yeah.
rooms.
That's
and,
absolutely right. It was, you know, done under duress.
But now, however, you, you eat carefully, live half the time in Wiltshire, you watch cricket... And I read that your favourite book is The Reader's Digest Book of Garden Plants and Flowers. Or were you taking the mickey when you said that to the people?
It's got a great plot.
It's another one, the plot.
Yeah, yes.
One
more pun, Arthur, than you're cancelled, I'm afraid.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, he's doing them, not me.
You're a great feed man, Arthur.
But you're a much more measured fellow these days, obviously.
Well, I guess as you get older, that does happen. I think you get a tape measure.
Anyway, you announced in 1990 from the stage, apparently seemingly spontaneously.
This is another rumour. I announced from the stage that I was leaving. You were going to say that I was going to leave the Stranglers.
No, I think you announced from the stage you were leaving the stage to go and have a pee. But on another occasion, you announced from the stage that you were leaving. Well, you didn't. Is this a myth?
No, absolutely not. I just did the gig and went out and got pissed and. The next day rang the other guys in the band and told them that I didn't want to do it anymore.
Which is fair enough in a way. Why did you not want to do it anymore?
Just got bored, really. I mean, you know, it's a crazy thing to leave a band when they're very successful, but you sometimes you have to do something when you feel you have to do it at the right time to do it. People say, oh, you were mad to do that because the greatest hits are coming out. Sod the greatest hits. You've got to do
That's
something when you do
it.
That's
the time in a way to leave, isn't it, when the greatest hits are coming
well,
out?
Well, yeah, exactly.
But they all hate you.
Do they? I don't know.
Well, that's what it says in the press clippings.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. I rang them all up last night. Every single one of them waiting outside with an axe.
Yeah.
But you don't still have relations with the rest.
No. I mean, it would be fine, but they never speak very kindly about me or my contribution. To our time together. So, I can never quite work out
who wrote all the songs. It sort of seems to be attributed to everyone, the songs.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Life's too short to be, you know, there are lots of people in the world. Why spend time with people that don't have a good thing to say about you?
Maybe the snake was joining a band called the Stranglers. If you joined a band that was called the sort of the Happy People or the
yeah,
the
but
kindly
the band wasn't in existence when
social,
I joined it.
Well, if you called yourself the Social Workers or something like that, you'd all be friends.
I didn't answer an ad in the paper. It said Stranglers need a lead singer guitarist. applications, please.
I think you've misunderstood. But they weren't literally stranglers.
No, I know, but there's a clue in the title. There's a clue tells you what they might be like.
But you're a solo artist now, and I believe you're playing at Ronnie Scott's on April the 8th.
Yeah, but saying a solo artist is a bit misleading because it suggests that one goes around with an acoustic guitar or, like Billy Bragg, an electric guitar and plays totally alone, and that's not exactly... Sometimes I do that and sometimes I play in an electric setup.
But you're very much the boss, though.
I'd call it a dictator. What do they call them?
Benny Hill.
A Benny Hill dictator.
Benevolent dictator.
Benevolent dictator. That's the word.
And you've also written about you love the craft of songwriting. Your songs are quite traditional. You have verse and chorus, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I suppose so. A middle eight. I love middle eight or a middle nine.
A middle eight. Now, you're about to introduce Golden Brown, which is a song, I mean, it's... are you sick of it by now, Golden Brown?
It was very successful. It's still listed as one of the top, you know, songs, you know, ever, and I'm quite happy with that, so I don't really get tired of it. It's a great song.
It's funny, I used to love Golden Brown, then, you get to a point where you've heard a song too often, and it wears off. And
the thing is that I can't play it the way that it was originally done, because I can't do all that. I'm not a good enough guitarist to do all that harpsichord doo-dee-dee on the guitar. So I had to find another way of playing it, so mine's more of a thrashy... acoustic guitar.
Well, it was the song. I mean, it's an inspiring song, and I was going to say that, you know, in recent years, it's sort of come back to me, Golden Brown. It really is a totemic thing. And before I go on stage in one-man shows I do, I have a little soundtrack of songs that get me in the mood. And the last two, I have a Golden Brown and then Nice and Sleazy.
Wow.
Which sort of gets you in that kind of stand-up mood.
Yeah. Can I say something about a tour that I'm doing?
Yes, go on, sorry, yes, go on.
When are we playing Ronnie Scott's?
April the 8th, or possibly 6th.
April the 6th, yeah.
Cheltenham on the 8th, the 9th of April in Doncaster, and then in Motherwell.
And now I'm delighted to introduce, I feel rather privileged to say, I'm going to introduce Hugh Cornwell doing one of the great songs of the 80s. He's got his guitar on, so I don't have to blether on too much longer. Golden
Here
Brown.
Here we go. Yeah.
Sexual accent lays me down in my mind. She runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown with Golden Brown. Every time, just like the last, on her ship, tied to her mast, two distant lands, takes both my hands, never a frown with Golden Brown. Golden Brown, fine temptress, through the ages she's heading west. From far away, stays for a day, never a frown, with Golden Brown. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
never a friend.